I would expect that it's more probably from vibration and such, if there's no air leak at all, which it only takes a little bit of an air leak to be a problem, but vibration, upgrading, whatever it is, whether it's the aluminum or whatever. But you should be able, that should be, you know, visibly obvious when you look in, if you were to clean it out, God forbid, and look closely with, in there, under good light.
Well, like for instance, I have a hole on top of it right now that's not filled. It's the size of an NMO antenna mount. And, so that's one hole, and there's another hole on the side, which is partially gasketed, but I'm wondering if air passing across the top would, you know, essentially slowly, you know, create a aluminum oxide deposit inside. I'll tell you one thing, you grab the cables and your hands are filthy. But not filthy black, they're filthy silvery like aluminum.
I would tend to suggest that it's abrasion on the outside is not going to cause dust on the inside unless there's some way for it to get there. But I would suggest if you've got two holes or at least one hole that there's a fair amount of dust and junk in the air moving at high speed relative to the box. Once it gets into the box, it's almost stagnant. So whatever dust is going to settle out all over the place and then finally get sucked out as, you know, newly cleaned air and SDK.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Get this box from top of your truck, and you are driving along, and you got the air pushing on the front of it, but in the back of it, you got a partial vacuum. So that could be that depending on where those holes are, it could be sucking into, because there's a partial vacuum in the back of the box, it might be that those holes are pulling in some outside air because of the partial vacuum on the back of the box, if you get what I'm driving at.
Yeah, and if anything else, after, you know, 10 years of having that box up there in one form or another, I'm willing to bet that that gasket, or those two gaskets, are probably partially compromised at some level. And if there is a vacuum in there, you're right. That's probably it. And, of course, having the hole on top probably creates a further siphoning effect. So think of the hole on top in terms of what happens when you, you know, was it Bernoulli's principle? I'm trying to remember now. When you blow across the top of the bottle and it creates a low-pressure area inside. Well, if you have a low pressure area inside because of a small hole on top, and you have a vacuum on the bottom into which air can be sucked in, there's your deposit source. And there's even an exacerbation of it, you know, creating a flow through the one hole on the top, like a cyclical loop, if you will.
AJ4WD.
Hey, Rachel, good evening.
Good evening. I had a friend that was an electrician, and he had an electrician's truck, and he found that there was a very minor abrasion just from the movement of things inside, even if it's just wire. And one of the things that he did is he got one of those rubber mats, and he lined the base of all of his boxes with that to cut down on the abrasion.
Ah, so basically the stuff sitting on the floor of the box would just abrade the bottom, and then it would rise in the air and just redeposit itself on the statically charged vinyl stuff that you have everywhere.
Ah, that's an affirmative.
Okay. What's interesting about this is all of these things could be operative. I mean, Don's idea, my idea, your idea. I think they're all probably operative in this case, and that's really kind of neat. Jim had some comments too as well. So, yeah, it is really kind of amazing because what I end up having to do is I end up having to take a bunch of essentially industrial wet wipes and roll out the cables and run them through several industrial wet wipes, clean the spools again, and then put them back in. So in my case, what I probably would do is just get some stick-on floor tiles, like the linoleum tiles or rubber stripping if I can find it. But the floor tiles might be cheaper, and just put it in there just to get rid of the abrasion component that you mentioned. That's a great idea. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, you said you got a hole in this thing, though? I mean, it's not waterproof?
Right now I have a hole in the top that's compromised the waterproofing, and what that's from is I had taken out the NMO mount, so I had removed the cabling to have worked on the vehicle. Having said that, it's time now to put all that stuff back. So yeah, it's a one little tiny, a 3/8 hole or something.
Yeah, that's all you need, though. When you're going down the road 60 miles an hour, there's a big vacuum in the back of that thing. Think about it. If that piece of plywood on the front of your, and you realize how much pressure you're pushing against the front of that thing, and it would be a good, could be a good amount, and act like an airfoil and suck things in, maybe. But I'd say get rid of that somehow, put a bolt in it or anything just to see. Did this happen before that hole appeared, or is this only since the hole appeared? That might be an answer too.
That happened before and after, but I would argue that it might be exacerbated by the presence of the hole, or the absence of the antenna mount, as it were. So that's good. That's good. But as you kind of mentioned, since the doors face backwards, you can bet after 10 plus years that the seals are somewhat compromised. Even though they're recessed and stuff like that, there's probably a vacuum, and having that hole on top allows for a cyclical airflow. If you think, was it Bernoulli's principle? Is it Pascal's law? I'm trying to remember now. Anyway, the whole point is air flowing over the open hole will cause pressure to lessen inside the box, which will cause air to egress through the vertical hole, which will then cause the seals in the back, which are already in a vacuum placement, to suck air in off the back through the somewhat compromised seals on the back of, by the door, around by the doors of the box, and then it'll create a circular flow, a rising flow at that, of air. Then you add in the friction effect, and pretty soon you've got all sorts of debris and airflow that you didn't anticipate, causing havoc.
Yeah, what you're trying to think of is Bernoulli, of course, and the basic principle is that it all just sucks air through the, I can't imagine that the door is airtight at speed, especially if it's that old and, been used as much. Of course, there's tremendous force on the box, and I would not be even slightly surprised if the door seal leaked a fair amount. That, in addition to the other stray hole that you've got on the top of the thing, and that's 2K.
With your J
Jim, and go ahead, Don.
You know, I often see the trucks, these 18-wheelers, on the top of the cab of the truck. They have a deflector that causes the airflow to go over the top of the trailer that they're pulling. Also, see people with pickup trucks. They put a cover over the bed of the pickup truck so that the tailgate does not act as a an obstruction to the air, and the air flows over the tailgate that way rather than try to push the tailgate back when you're driving along. So that you've got quite a bit amount of pressure. I imagine you could improve your gas mileage quite a bit if you took that box off.
Yeah, well, that latter step is not one I'm going to take. The airfoil question is more interesting, however. We've had conversations about the airfoil. Some of the conversations have centered around a simple airfoil. Others have centered around placing some of the harbor freight solar panels on a angle frame and then pitching it up at an angle to provide that airfoil, but then also to cover it with some plexiglass so as to provide some, shall we say, protection of the glass surface of the cells. So we've talked about that too, but you know, there are lots of possibilities.
I had a 1972 Ford station wagon with the built-in roof rack. And on the end of the roof rack over the window of the back window on the station wagon, there was an air deflector. The idea being that it would blow the dust off or whatever was accumulating off the window so it wouldn't accumulate dust all the time. And that was so... I was just thinking that would break up the vacuum in the back of your, something like that, just a piece maybe 3 or 4 inches wide, just placed just above the top of your doors, would break the vacuum up a bit.
Ah, okay. You know, my father had the same thing. He had the Chevy, but it was the same principle. So, not the same vintage too, which is amazing. So, basically, you're saying on the top of the box, put an air deflector to vector the air down. Yeah, you know, we could perhaps do that. It would make getting over the box a little less convenient, but then again, the advantages are pretty obvious, and that might even improve the gas mileage a little bit. But that's not what I was really working on. All right, well, this is good. Very, very good. Anybody else have any thoughts?
You have the nerve to say the words gas mileage?
Well, yeah, because I actually get miles per gallon as opposed to gallons per mile.
Just barely.
Oh, come on, 11 is wonderful considering what I can haul around, who I can haul around.
I can imagine the wind tunnel. You'd really need to put this thing in to properly design. Then again, I suppose you could stand up there at speed with your punk sticks and watch the smoke turbulence to get this deflector or whatever it is right.
So let me get this straight. You want me to stand there with punk sticks around the vehicle? Or hanging out the window with punk sticks as they drive down the highway at 60 miles an hour? Is that really what you want me to do?
Well, someone else would do the driving, presumably.
I think if I was going to do this, I would probably set up one of those party smoke things in front of the van. And
go out on the edge of the ramp at Teterboro and have somebody, you know, fire up like a Cessna 182 or something.
Well, that might be slightly safer. Hey, go talk to Charlie. He set you up at Essex.
See you now, Caldwell Airport. You can see you now. Yeah, that'd be great. Hey, Charlie, I need an aircraft not to take off, but just to next time you're doing an engine test, I need to sit, park my vehicle straight behind them with some party smoke, you know, like smoke canisters in front of my van, so I can see how the air flows across it. And then, of course, I need a high-speed camera, so I can then slow it down and figure out what it is that was really going on.
I think you should do it at night with proper lighting so that you maximize the contrast with the smoke.
But you want the strobe, too, at a set rate, so that way we can, you know, measure the movement of the smoke?
Oh, that would help.
Why is this starting to sound more like Mythbusters than it is something that's good, anyway? We're kind of beating this to death. We're getting intriguingly silly, but this is very good. Any other comments from anybody?
Yeah, I think you did mention the deflector on the front of the thing, so that your vehicle would night through the air rather than have this box, which is apparently 90 degrees, straight up and down, pushing up against the air. Like there'd be some benefit, like the tractor trailer guy has on his cab, that something like that. I mean, you see these boxes that some people have on their cars as car carriers for extra luggage. They're pretty well streamlined. So maybe just something to think about. You know, whether we'll do it or not is something else. Or maybe you could make a triangular box for in the front that would store something and put it to good use.
That's a great idea. I'll leave you with this one today. I'm going to list the subject list. You've all seen some of the, should we say, the pursuit cars that some law enforcement agencies are using these days. And I forget the model, but it's a Plymouth that's particularly handy, that's compact and really, really, you know, gutsy. It's four-door. Well, I've seen this one black one around town. I'm going, what the hell is this? I mean, I've seen it around. I thought, gee, the Burgerville Police Department has this really unusual vehicle, and it's got, you know, low-profile radio antennas, and it's got not one but two searchlights. I said, that's interesting. It's got a push bar on the front, and as I found out later, it's got a laptop built in, and it has the connections for a radio, but no radio anymore. Some other things. I'm like, what the heck is this? And it rolls into my church parking lot this morning around 7:30 or so. And I walk over to who was driving it through the tinted window, and there is my son's former English teacher. Social studies teacher. They go, what the hell are you doing driving this? She goes, oh, isn't this neat? And I said, yeah. So she parks her car, and she then tells me about it. It was built for a law enforcement show a few years ago. Someone else bought it, and then she bought it from the person who had the law enforcement show. So she does it just for the cool factor. She says it's great. She drives in traffic, and people get out of her way.
To JK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yes. Thing on the internet yesterday about some police cars out in California. Apparently they're made in Australia, but there's something like a Chevy Impala, but they have a lot of those features on them, push bar on the front, and all kinds of things. the seats are designed so that when you're sitting in them, there's an area where your gun will go so that it doesn't jab you. Like a normal seat would, it has an area where the recess for the barrel of the gun, stuff like that. A lot of good stuff in there. Has a shield, a plexiglass shield, so that the back passenger can't cause you any grief when you're transporting somebody. They open up the trunk, and there's a shelf that slides out. It has all the radio equipment on it. It's just sort of like on rollers. So that was interesting.
Well, this past weekend I saw the new state police cars that are like that. They're using business rugged Dell laptops mounted in the trunk and a custom really rugged keyboard and display in the front that's remote to it. So it's they're no longer using tough function in the front. It's a very different kind of a approach in the state police cars now to what's been going on before. They've been rolling out for a couple of years, apparently, and they've had no trouble with thermal issues with the laptops in the trunk, because they actually add extra air conditioning from the passenger compartment into the trunk. It's like, okey-doke. So, a lot of these same features are in a lot of vehicles. James, hold on. Alrighty. So yeah, I've been in Westwood tonight. Is this Emerson? It's the Stop and Shop. Anyway, I was waiting for James because he's up in Hillsdale at a meeting, and I didn't want to drive all the way back to Bergenfield, so I figured I would just wait and do the nets here, since I had about 15 minutes to spare after I dropped them off. It's perfect. Anyway, so this has been interesting, but now I'm in a mad dash to collect CF-29 and CF-30, and if I really can, CF-31 parts on the gun guns. I really do like the effectiveness of my CF-29s, and I would like to suggest that maybe in the future, if we can find some surplus ones, that we get some CF-29s and set them up for contesting. We could also set them up with the ICS forms and use them for what we're doing disaster assistance teams. We're filling out those things and such. We might want to consider that as well. That might be something get some more use because the best contesters, actually the best emergency operators, are at some level contesters. And tactical traffic handlers, net controls. Not so much the MTF types. The MTF types are good too, but they have certain constraints when things get really crunchy. So, anyway, enough of that. Anybody else have any comments about, interesting vehicles? Oh, by the way, there are no flashy lights on this vehicle. There never were. Unless they were in the grill, but they weren't obvious. And why I flagged the car down in the parking lot, by the way, is because I could see from a mile away it had handicap plates. And I said, what is up with that? And she said, oh, that's the other thing. Most people think that Bergenfield and whatever town she's in, they think that the police department's gone nuts with an unmarked car with handicap plates.
Question.
Any other comments, questions, confusions for the net tonight?
Question.
Yes, Mr. Jim.
Did you ever get your, how should I say, contributed 5,000?
It's already in Hoffman Estates. The laptop to go with it has not arrived.
Ah, very good.
Killing me. It's absolutely killing me. It's like, and it's killing another colleague of mine. Let me elaborate. By the way, there is heat lightning in the sky here. I just thought you guys would like to know that. In the range of around the state line, maybe inside the state line, but going from west to east as I go, as I drive north, I'm looking at it. And it's rather, you know, repetitive. I'm in the middle of Westwood right now at Five Corners, and there's a lot of heat lightning, mostly in the northwestern sky. But anyway, so what Tim is referring to is that I've been asked to work on a project, as yet another thing I do, to take a Flex 5000 and see how it can be used to analyze, shall we say, spectral anomalies, I'll leave it at that, or spectral conditions. That might be another way of looking at it. Ultimately, they want to be able to put it in places to see if there is electrical interference of a RF nature, either local or remote, that might be impacting our network, which is very cool. And there's all sorts of possibilities for that, which I won't go into here. But so naturally, in order to be a functional contributor to this this project, I need to be furnished with a proper device. And so my device is a Flex 5000A with the dual receive module, the automatic antenna tuner, and of course the VHF-UHF module, which the prior recipients of this device have not received. But when asked about how I wanted mine, I think I said all the new ones should be furnished this way because we have projects in a broad range of spectrum.
Very nice.
To show up. That's the bottom line. But when asked about what we could do with such a device, or even its low-budget $600 quantity one or $700 quantity one little brother, the IC, the Flex was the Flex 1500. My answer was a 9-page PowerPoint presentation, which I whipped out in about 30 minutes. So I guess I answered the question. I guess that might be the best thing to say. So Jim, is that what you wanted to hear?
I'm impressed with the 9 pages in 30 minutes. That's quite a line. Anyway, very good.
Yeah, well, you know how you do that? You take all the text messages and all the emails that you've been accumulating on the subject for a period of time, and you just start dropping text in, and then clean it up, organize it, sort it out, and, you know, tell the story, and away you go. I'd say there's one or two pages of fluff, maybe three, and James is getting in the car, and there's some, I think I added another three or four pages later of material that was referencing the configuration of, you know, what you would need, the software, what other auxiliary things you'd need. But I think six of those pages were one each topical solution sets, you know, where I might discuss between one and three solutions per page, you know, that could be derived out of that. Who would be the benefiting organizations, internal and external?
J-E-K sounds like a bug detector.
No, I didn't do that. Honestly, I didn't do that. That was not one of my solutions or application solutions. But I did have quite a generous list of ideas. You know, you guys are bright boys. You'll probably figure out some of them yourself. It was a lot of fun. How we would prototype it, how would we do proofs of concepts, and then how would we turn it into viable products or viable tools for the management of our network and our services. There's, shall we say, bits of that roadmap thrown in there just for good measure. But Jim, the way I do it is, you have a lot of dialogue, and what I tend to do is I tend to scratch notes, even if it's in a text message to myself or an email to myself when I'm talking with someone on the phone, and that way it becomes a searchable blob of text later as opposed to a notebook.
Very good. No, I had just not heard of anyone who was able to spin the, bowl quite that quickly. But, of course, you had, you cheated in other ways. Very good.
Well, you know, stock and trade is being able to sell the ideas that you have, in your head. What if? I mean, realistically, I need myself a PhD and go off and work in the research side of the house. But I'm only 6, 8, why don't we say 10 to 12 semesters short of what I would need to do that.
That's a lot of semesters.
Yeah, and I'm 53, so. I'm actually working on another project, which is kind of cool. You guys can look up HSMM Mesh. And, for mesh nodes, these Wi-Fi nodes that are designed to self-mesh, when another one rolls up and there's all sorts of security issues with that, blah, 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 blah. Let's say you wanted to pass messages across that mesh fabric, and you want to control the flooding so that you don't end up with waste, but you want to make sure you touch every node possible, or not, as the case may be, you want to route across the mesh to a specific node. So someone's written some really nice software and research to do that, and now they're looking for applications, and oh gee, first responder applications seem to be the number two on the hit parade right after the military being number one. So anyway, I'm going to be working on that project too, and the reason for working on that project, from my viewpoint, is to learn how to manage, diagnose, troubleshoot in that environment.
NS2K.
Yeah, James is asking me a question here. Anyway, I'm looking for really cool applications that people like us kind of guys would like to have, or other first responders would like to have, to go over top of such an infrastructure.
Someone was using a Perseus SDR to do at least semi quantitative measurements, but apparently it's pretty well used in the scientific community and other, you know, testing situations. Makes a good near instrument grade device, an S2K.
The Perseus, yeah, absolutely. Well, we were looking for something a bit cheaper. How much is the Perseus? Was it about $1,200?
Oh, I have no idea. Anyway, obviously you need something with a 100 watt emitter as well, test signal generator.
Yeah, well, the Perseus is not known to be particularly cost effective, but it is a very, you would say, talented box. Having said that, it's, what do you call it? It's, there are other goodies, and the Flex 1500 comes to mind. The only thing I think that Perseus might do it might be broader in its IF. In other words, it can sweep without having to retune. I think you can sweep a broader chunk of spectrum, but. You know, we were looking for something that was really, really cheap. You know, if you think about what the quantity one amateur price is for a Flex 1500, strip it down for, you know, amateur or for commercial use and buy thousands of them or hundreds of them, you understand where that price could go, right?
Oh, yeah, for a lot of purposes, that would be just great.
Right. But, so, you know, it's a pretty exciting box. I mean, we're obviously using the 5000 because we want to, you know, get the juice going. But once that's done, we can pretty much go anywhere, you know, we want. With a 1500 or a strip 1500 or something tailor-made. And again, depending on which one of the solutions we're trying to hit on, it would be pretty straightforward. All I can say is if you look at VDSL, VDSL 2, HPNA, that's the spectrum of interest. Anyway. So, loads of fun. Loads of fun. And we'll certainly get there. Just got to get the equipment into my hands. I expected to have it weeks ago. And this laptop thing is just, like, stupid. I mean, it's just plain stupid.
It'd be terrible if you had to use a computer of your own.
The whole process of acquiring the laptop is kind of like what happens when a mouse shows up in front of a herd of elephants. The elephants just stop or turn away, and nothing gets done. Anyway. I don't know who else is in here. Don was in here. Jim, you're here. Don, you still with us? W2JUK, W2TTTK, TBAR.
Yeah, I'm still here at Gordon. Yeah, I'm just listening to what's going on here.
Okay. By the way, Jim and Don and others, we've taken... as a way to, stress the, it's done a couple of different stresses, but one way to stress the this mesh networking thing, away from the SDR topic for a moment, is that we made a game that is essentially tag using an Android phone that's mesh-enabled, and then provide all your teammates, and in some cases the opposition, with a moving map of who's alive, who's dead, who's about to come alive again because, you know, they've, shall we say, spent enough time in downtime mode, that kind of thing. So we actually have a mesh-enabled, GPS-enabled, IR-enabled, or Bluetooth-enabled, excuse me, the game that kids can play. We did that as a prototype in a research site, and it was amazing how fast the kids could learn how to use it compared to the adults. Some interesting studies on that as well, but that's a different evaluative process. But the bottom line is they built it on top of this mesh networking thing as a way just to get another proof of concept application going. Say again?
The mesh network was a key aspect of the whole one laptop per child scheme, where you couldn't, under, how should I say, rural conditions, have sufficient capacity, bandwidth, and penetration to provide a direct connection to every laptop. But through the mesh, data permeates, as it were.
That's right. Well, think about it from a safety viewpoint. One of the examples that was given was at Narita Airport right after the earthquake recently in Japan. There were pictures of people standing outside of the terminals, not knowing what to do, being very well behaved, because they're Japanese by and large. But in point of fact, they weren't sure if they should be inside, outside, or whatever. And there was really no direction. People just kind of milled around. Some people knew to get out of buildings, and other people didn't know. So you can kind of see the spectrum of humanity, all well behaved in various positions of, shall we say, safety or risk. In fact, the weather had been hostile. It might have been a pick your poison kind of situation. So if in that case everybody had, you know, meshed Wi-Fi devices and you can get one signal into one mesh-enabled device via the cellular network, you can then propagate the direction so that you in Terminal A go outside, and even if only a certain percentage of the people have that information, they'll tell the people next to them that we should go out. It says here, the Port Authority wants you to go outside, you know. Whereas you could also propagate it over a secure, like a secure pipe over top of the mesh. You could direct, you could communicate with your first responders or selected, should we say, staff, for lack of a better term, and get them to where they need to be to handle the crowd. And if it's a terrorist event, you could even perhaps direct certain, you know, things to be different, both for the public and for your responders.
Keep in mind, being a node on the mesh does not necessarily mean you are a participant in that particular blob of data. You're merely a node in the mesh. But the other thing that occurred to me quite some time back, and looking at, how should I say, dynamic traffic management, it would be
my mind, a classic application for the mesh where all nearby vehicles would communicate with each other as to their status and so on.
Well, yes, Roger on both points, and there are some other implications of that, security implications on top of that, that could be done, both to mask and also to secure, which is different, the fact that there's a secure message going across. Masking basically allows you to generate traffic such that no one suspects that should we say an official communications is going across the mesh. Basically you do a managed flood, and so people are never quite certain what's what. You could play that game. So anyway, it's interesting. As far as the other matter, I'm sorry, I forgot which one was. What was your second point?
First thing was what you probably would want to do if you were at all concerned with security, and OLPC may not be, but for something else, no problem. Just encrypt everything, and you only get to read it if you have a key for that particular message thread. But the other thing was for tracking of moving vehicles along a highway, take that and GPS data, and you might set the thing up so that any one message is only passed on a limited number of times, so you don't end up flooding, you know, the entire world with every bit of data. So the vehicles in your vicinity would know every other vehicle in the vicinity.
Right. And then at some level you'd float that up to some management authority, but you'd constrain it. You're right. And that's part of our technology, is how that's constrained. So it's not flooding for flooding. It's not flooding to saturate. It's flooding to ensure reliability, but also minimize senseless redundancy. So it's a little more intelligent than traditional mesh networks. And you put your applications on top of that. The upshot of this, though, is that you do need a way to, I mean, there are products today out there that will do that roll-up mesh identity exchange thing. There are products out there that does that. I'll just say this. They may not do it as well as they need to, and that's one of the advantages of our technology. So we're just looking for a variety of proofs of concepts, and it should be interesting to see how it all rolls out. It really will. Anyway, Jim and Don, whoever else is out there, I gotta go. But this has been fun.
2K.
Have fun, and that's 2K. Yeah, I can see the kid in the car now going, oh, watch this, as he sends out a message that he's braking sharply. See how all the cars around him react. Great fun. Anyway, now there's obviously got to be a mechanism around that. And as 2K, have a great evening.
Yeah. There's all sorts of interesting things that have to be done. 73NS2K, W2JEK, and the rest of the group, thank you very much for an interesting evening. W2TTT.
Okay, Gordon, W2JEK, I was just thinking that the application is something like that, to all the General Motors vehicles with the OnStar on them. That would be, you could actually talk to the people on board the car. With that, 73's W2JK.
Hey, Don, James is preparing to take the general on Saturday. He can bring a copy of his FCC computer printout if he can't find his license, right?
Yeah, that's fine. Bring that and a copy of it. I keep one and I send one up to the league.
He will come so armed. All right, very good. We'll see you Saturday. W2JK and S2K in the group. W2TTTK2BR is securing. Thank you.
W2JK, click. Good night.
At 75 or better?
72 or more? No. How many times have I wanted to tell the black BMW behind me to back the heck off? Have a good one. NS2K.
I hear you. Is it 72 or better? Look it up. W2TTT. 73, hang me out of the car.
GTM listening.
GOD listening.
K9 GOD, this is K9 GTM.
Hey Sean, how you doing?
Not too bad. How about you?
Driving home after a long day. I'm just passing, what is it, Teterboro Airport.
I'm actually in Minnemore. I just picked up a gallon of milk.
Wait, you get thirsty?
Hey, James, I got the ready to work on the post frequency.
So, how did you figure that out?
Well, what they do is with these radios, when they leave the factory, they lock out those frequencies because they don't want people that don't have licenses to use them, so you have to unlock them.
Is that a software or a hardware modification?
I'm not too sure. If you bring it to like a dealer and they do it. I couldn't find nothing online about it.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, you took it back to where you got it, right?
Well, I bought mine online, but he thought I bought it there, so it kind of worked out.
Oh, that's awesome.
But if anybody from the unit does go there to pick up one of these radios, just tell them that you're also going to use it for search and rescue, and he'll do what he's got to do to it. It's still perfectly legal because it's on the back end of the radio does have the frequency ranges on it.
That's cool. That's the place in Lodi, right?
Affirm. Yeah, it's right on Essex Street.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it's right off 17, I guess.
So when you get off 17, onto Essex Street, I believe you're going to make a right and go straight down to the left.
Yeah, I should try to go there sometime. You're still going to the, swap meet, right?
It's affirmative. I'm going to go in the morning before I go to work to check it out anyway. So how do my tracks look?
You know, to be honest with you, Sean, I apologize. I hadn't had a chance to look at it. You know, I'm getting hit from all sides right now, so I'll try to look at it either later tonight or tomorrow morning when I'm at home.
Yeah, no big hurry. I was just scared. I know there's some gaps in it because of the terrain, because of the hills and stuff. You couldn't walk through it, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know the area that you're talking about. It's pretty rugged.
Don't say that again.
Pretty rugged.
Yeah, especially the side by the that lovely pond.
Man, people are driving nuts tonight.
Yeah, I heard there's some tornado watches up in Orange and Sullivan County.
Do you know the time warning on that?
Tornado warning up there, and then around like Bergen County was a thunderstorm warning.
Until what time?
I believe up there was like 11 o'clock.
Boy, it's like the Indianapolis 500 tonight. Everybody's out driving.
They're all getting ready to go away for the weekend.
So, are you working the whole weekend?
Affirmative. Today was my first day on the, and I'm working until Monday.
Yeah, well, I just got one more to go, and then I get two off.
Yeah, my today's off for Monday, Tuesday.
I mean, working 4 days a week is nice. I mean, to have the 3 days off, but the 4 days you do work, it's, you know, it gets to be a long day.
Yeah, that's what we do. We do 4 on for 3 weeks and then 5 on for our last week. We rotate the days off, so we work 4 and 2.
So have you talked to anyone else on the radio?
Yeah, I was trying to talk to I was talking to somebody today. I think Dick was his name. I forgot what his call sign was.
K9GODID.
K9MID. Yeah, I was talking to Dave yesterday trying to figure out this radio thing. That's why I decided to go to Lodi.
So how did you verify that it worked?
Once I put it in, actually in the store, he keyed it up, and once the light turns red, then I know it's transmitting. But when I got home, I turned my scanner on, and I was able to hear.
Oh, that's awesome. So, what did Dave say?
Told him what the problem was. He said it's...
But it took this guy no time to do it, right?
Oh yeah, it took him like 2 minutes. He put it on the computer, and it's just there. Oh, here it is. So he just never opened it up. When you bought it, you didn't tell me that you were using it for, other frequencies that the license for. So I guess you're looking for some ideas on Saturday about your little, your antenna tower?
Yeah, I gotta figure out,